you know, this religious issue only happens when there's peace, you know what I mean? When they're not involved, but when they have, you know, an outside danger, then they put aside the differences. No, I gather most it's a human trait, no?
Yeah, well, okay, let's start out and say this is Edward Campbell and Rabbi Yisrael David Weiss.
Yeah, Rabbi Yisrael
And we're in Muncie,
Weiss,
New York, and you are the... Head of the
spokesperson, one of the spokespeople for Natura Carta, that is Jews United Against Zionism. It's the Natura Carta means the protectors of the city. It's our Aramaic for Natura Protectors Carta of the city, and that's referring to Jerusalem. And that was formed when the ideology of Zionism started coming into Palestine in the beginning of the 20th century. Then the Jewish community, which was almost entirely religious, felt the danger of this influx of this new movement of Zionism. So they started forming a rabbinic court, the Eidah Haredis, God-fearing community, it was called, and they took rabbis for the special, and then people started getting together and being more vocal against Zionism, and you know, stating their position and doing whatever they could to oppose Zionism, and they started being referred to as Natura Carta, the protectors of the city to oppose Zionism.
So would you say that you're a part of the? I guess there's some sort of distinction between Hasidic and Haredi.
Okay,
according to Wikipedia.
So, first thing is, I pray to the Almighty to bestow upon me His truth, His wisdom, that I should be able to convey His truth to whoever's going to get this widespread message from you.
Well, primarily this is
reporting.
This is aimed at more of the protest left-wing kind of movement.
Uh-huh.
And they were people who, and I want to read you someone who replied to my cross-posting of your Terry Carta's letter to Pope Benedict.
Uh-huh.
And they said this, and these people, they claim to be the vanguard of really of the Palestinian people, and they say that you're really not. And I kind of elided some of it. I just put the high parts. This is very shocking statement. They say NK is numerically insignificant, 500 families. And then it goes on and says, fundamentalists, obscurationists, misogynists, these maniacs are hideous caricatures. Jews who are best at anti-Zionists are progressive, queer positive, secular, feminist, organized as International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, or IJAN, and others. There are more of us than these black hat fanatics. And I looked them up, and they're associated with Motzman out of Israel.
Motzin
is the socialist organization of Israel.
Right. Well, now it's the further I heard of that.
You haven't even heard of it.
Yeah.
Well, they're. Well, okay. I guess you can't answer that question. Well, I mean, you can still answer that they are. It seems that there are these. There are really two parts of Israel. There are secular Jews, who attack Judaism,
right.
In very anti-Semitic sort of ways,
right.
And then there are, religious Zionists,
right,
who are associated, for instance, with the yeshivas that I attended,
right.
And so,
I think we should give it. So, like I say, first I pray to the Almighty to bestow upon me His truth, His wisdom, that I should be able to convey His truth to whoever has the privilege of hearing these words, and that we can then sanctify His name and bring peace to the world. I mean, the message that you've just read is of course somebody just like opened the dictionary, took every type of fanatical name or whatever, or you know, derogatory name that he could use or they felt would be derogatory, and tried to apply it to us. It's ridiculous. I mean, a few of them are just contradictory statements, I believe. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I've had a number of problems with in attempting to elucidate the Palestinian position as I understood it, with these sorts of people, because they are so anti-religious. That's how usually how the rabbis there refer to them as being anti-religious. But in some sense, they're almost anti-Semitic. But they claim to be. So what is their grounding
for
being in Israel? Why do they want to live there? I mean, you supported religious Torah Jews who immigrated from Israel because they can take the fascism there. And like, for instance, these sorts of people, I've seen them on, for instance, I think it was Bar Ilan that runs through Mea Shearim.
Right.
And the Hasidim that come out and they wanted to stop people driving through their neighborhood on Shabbat.
Right.
And so they organized a demonstration of 100,000 Torah Jews.
Right.
And of course, so that 10 cars from Tel Aviv can drive through the thing, waving out the window, honking their horns, and then the Israeli police come in and with these giant clubs, just bashing Hasidim in the head and trampling with horses. And so you have to wonder why these people want to live in Israel.
That's a good question. You brought up so many different points.
But it's a very complicated place, and I think that a lot of Americans, they think about Jews, they don't they think that, now this is another, this is something that I'm beginning to see more currently is Hashem tattoos on people's arms. It says something in
Which is contradictory, of course, to the, it's forbidden, according to the Torah, to have tattoos.
Right.
But I think we should really, because there's so many like very important subjects that you brought up, and it would be confusing, I think, and then we may forget some of the very important issues and the attacks that this fellow sent to you. What was it, sent to your site or something?
It was posted as a comment that I decided not to reply to.
Right, but I think basically what we should really, like
are they
say,
really
I think we'll just address the concept and I don't think it would be, I hope with God's help, once we address the issues, all these comments will be fall to the side and be understood that they're really neither here nor there. That it's you know, just attacks that are false attacks, basically. One interesting thing that he, in the middle of the attack, he said that there's a, beside this, you know, just name calling and all that, but like he said, they're a lot more than us, like, you know, there's a very interesting, very old anecdote from Jewish history that once a pope came to one of the rabbis as a, and he asked him, in the Torah it says he should go after the majority. So how come you are not Christians, or the Jewish people are not Christians? So so first of all, the basic answer is that you know, the Torah has a specific and a system of when you go after the majority, when you don't go after the majority, and let's say if the majority would say that you should eat pig, that wouldn't change the Torah one iota. It doesn't matter if they're obeying the Torah. There's like a certain system. So it says you go after if there's something which is wrong that doesn't go according to the Torah, then you don't follow the majority. And then he pointed out, well, it's actually a long anecdote. He pointed to the sky and he said, he started saying that I see angels here, you know, whatever. And he was sort of taking a stroll with the Pope. They were very friendly. Or a priest, maybe I shouldn't say the Pope was the priest, I'm sorry, you know, the local priest, whatever. And they were walking and they were, you know, the priest asked him why he should, not the Pope, I'm sorry. He asked him why he should, you know, why doesn't he, if he go after the majority, and the Torah says he follow the majority law. So he was strolling with this priest, and in the middle of the conversation he said, hey, you see over there, those are angels over there, and so the priest turned and he started saying, look over there between those two clouds, and the priest didn't want to. That's the way the story goes. It could be just anecdotal, and it's really, it could be even, it's an, you know, it's not even, it could be the true story exactly happened that way. The point that comes across is true. The issue, even though if the story, if it didn't happen like that, because it's I didn't see it. It's not like a Mishnah, a law. It's just, you know, anecdotes. So, But the point is what's important of the story. So the priest looked up and he saw the rabbi saying that there's an angel there, and he felt that if the rabbi sees the angel, he has to also see the angel. He says, yeah, you're right. You know, and he starts saying, he also sees him. And then people started gathering around. They saw the rabbi and the priest standing there. And they said, what are they talking about? And so they say, they're talking about they see angels. So everybody said, well, where? So one guy said, don't you see over there between the clouds? And then the one guy said, everybody started seeing angels all of a sudden in the clouds. And then the rabbi turns around and he says to the priest, well, I don't see any angels. What do you see there? What is that? So the priest, well, I don't know. And then everybody said, so he said, well, look, you have masses of people who are seeing angels. But there's no, you don't see it. It's just, you're going to go after the masses. It doesn't work that way. In other words, but that's only act. In other words, the Torah anyway is very strict and has a very set, exacting set of laws when you go after the majority and things like that. So, and the point is that you can't just say because the majority says something, if the majority of people in agreed to commit mass murder or anything like that, you know, or something, or communism, where in Russia, where they killed millions and millions of people, many of the people were simply because of fear. You know, each one's afraid of his neighbor and afraid of his own children, you know. So that doesn't mean that's what's proper. It doesn't work like that. You only go after the majority. But maybe it's too long-winded. The point is that he says we have a lot more numbers than the black-hatted people, right. What he was mentioning. That is just plain ridiculous. The numbers doesn't mean anything. It happens to be, in fact, the Rambam, one of our codifiers of the law, Maimonides, states that Abraham was one. He recognized that there is an Almighty to the universe that created the universe, and that everything is from the Almighty. And everybody disagreed with him, and he fought the world. It says Echad Hayavram. Abraham was one. He stood up to the world, and that was it. And he gave this belief system to his generations. Of course, he started. He came from Noah. And Noah came from Adam, who recognized the Almighty. But the point is that even if you're the few, right and wrong doesn't change. One on one, as my Rabbi Beck, who have long and healthy years, lives here, and Muncie says, one on one is two. One on one is never three. You can come and people can talk to you from today to today and convince you that one on one is three, but won't change. The fact of the truth stays the truth, and what's right is right. The fact is that if many people will come and dispute or come for something, stand up for something that's wrong, it won't make it right. And in Torah, it's very clear that, as I say, Maimonides brings that Abraham was one. We have to follow that, know that rule, that even if we're a minority, when it comes to belief in God and things like that, you have to know what's right is right, even if the whole world is standing against you. Thank God, in the Jewish belief, there is, thank God, masses and masses of people and hundreds of thousands around the world who are true to Judaism and didn't transform Judaism, didn't accept the transformation of Judaism into Zionism. That's true to the Torah law, and they're true to the opposition to Zionism. Not everybody is vocal, but there are many people. They're fearful, intimidated by Zionism, and Zionists.
Very dangerous.
And very, yeah, so they don't speak up, many of them, that much. I always try to point out. I'll go back to that. Even if nobody would, God forbid, have remained true to the Torah and in the belief that Zionism is the diametric opposite of Judaism and is forbidden and is illegitimate and illegal according to the Torah, it still would remain illegitimate and cannot be fused together with Judaism. It's totally illegitimate, this movement, Zionism and the State of Israel, forbidden according to the Torah and can never be accepted or acceptable by Judaism. Even if everybody would change their minds and opinions about it, and we'll explain with God's help why. But the fact is, thank God, as I say, there's very many large communities and masses of Jews around the world who, the more religious they are, the more anti-Zionist they are. And we always, I invite people, I always say, you come visit New York, You go to Manhattan, you cross Manhattan to Williamsburg, that's
right,
in Brooklyn, and that's the most religious Jewish, concentrated religious Jewish area in here, and you won't find one Israeli flag. They're very religious community, and therefore, they're very anti-Zionist. There's not one Israeli flag. All the children, whoever you'll stop on the street, everybody's anti-Zionist. You will go to the most religious Jewish communities in Kutz, in Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
and again, that would be in Meir Sha'arim, and you will find that they're very anti-Zionist. And wherever on the planet Earth, wherever you will go, where there's a very large religious Jewish community, you will find that being, if they're very religious, they're very knowledgeable in their Judaism, they are anti-Zionist.
But what about the what about these yeshivas like
okay,
Eish HaTorah?
Right, now.
You know, and they're trying to say, well, they are Shomer Shabbos, they are alleged
right.
you know, Orthodox.
Now, right, you do have the problems that you're going to ask that's confusing, because you find settlers, it seems that they're very religious, in fact, they're very given over to their religion, it seems,
mm-hmm.
and they're extremely loyal to this concept of Zionism and taking over the land and so forth. So how does that coincide, how does that jive with what I've just said, that with that the more religious the more anti-Zionist? So that of course needs an explanation, and with God's help we'll stop. But I think what I should do is first try to explain the difference, what Zionism, what Judaism and Zion, and what Zionism is, and to understand the difference, and then we'll explain where the place for confusion and mistakes, and why you will find people do accept Zionism, where that comes about. So let's just start with God's help. I'll try to be very as concise as I can. Judaism is a religion of thousands of years. It's the covenant that the Jewish people accepted on Mount Sinai a few thousand years ago, in which they were the great-grandchildren, grandchildren, great-grandchildren of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who Abraham recognized the one God, and his generations later, from Isaac and then Jacob, they went down to Egypt. After they left Egypt, they went to Mount Sinai, accepted this covenant to follow the Torah, to be subservient to the Almighty by making this covenant of the 613 commandments of the Bible, the five books of Moses.
And that's the blessing and the curse comes is, if you agree to this, I will
right.
bring you rain in due season.
True. And
if
yeah.
don't do it,
then
is in your...
God forbid, right. And in fact, that one of the stipulations of the Torah, which is many times repeated in the Torah, in the five books of Moses, that God wanted us to go into the Holy Land, to uphold the Torah there, because it's, let's just say, like it's the garden of God, and it's a very holy place, and he wanted us, the temple should be built there, and that we should serve him there, and, but it's a very, it's like a special a center of the universe, a place that God considered a very holy place, that he's more exacting with the people who are living there than in other parts of the world. So therefore, God warned us that if you will not be on this high level of holiness in the Holy Land, and the land itself will reject you as it had the nations prior to you who were living there, the Canaanites, because they defiled the land,
mm-hmm.
they served idol worship and so forth, and it was spit out. So in other words, it's like a foreign object in a body gets rejected by the body, because the body is very sensitive. So we were warned many times, it's a verse in the Torah many times, similar verses, that be careful, the ground should not, the whole, or it's the land, the Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, should not reject you, if you will defile the land. So be very careful how you when you're living there. And we find, following in the Jewish teaching, we have the prophecies, all the books of prophets, which is Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, all of them, and where they all speak about how the Jews were warned by these prophets that they're not on this remaining on, they're not on, attaining this, or not remaining on this high level of holiness, and therefore they should be careful, because there will come about a destruction of the temple. They were set out, not because they were physically weak, clearly not, but rather because of their spiritual lacking.
But doesn't like, I don't the religious Zionists take from the beginning of the book of Joshua, where Joshua...
Oh, yes, yes, we'll get it. That's, we'll get into that. But just can bear with me a few minutes.
Okay.
So basically, they came, we were warned by the prophets, and eventually it came about the destruction of the temple. And again, clearly because of our spiritual lacking, we were sent into exile. And because we were not on that level of holiness that was required to be in the Holy Land. Then we were put under oath by God, by the Almighty, that the oaths of exile, we call them, that we were put under three basic oaths. One is not to return en masse to the land of Israel. One, not to rebel against any nation. We have to be loyal citizens in every country residing. And thirdly, not to make any attempt to try to end exile in any manner whatsoever.
And now this is in the Talmud?
Yeah, now what we'll explain, the Talmud is basically, the Torah is divided into two categories, let us say. One is the oral law and one is the written law. The written is the five books of Moses and the prophecies. The oral law is what, at the same time, God, when he gave the Torah, these five books of Moses, to Moses on Mount Sinai, he explained to him orally.
Is that Mishnah Torah? Would be oral?
Well,
is that right?
Well, I'll explain what Mishnah Torah is.
Okay.
But it's called, it was orally, that was called the oral law, that God spoke to Moses, wasn't written, that to explain, because if anybody just looks at the five books of Moses, there's so many laws that I can mention that just has one brief comment about it. For instance, anybody who knows about kosher, it says, everybody who really studies anything about Judaism knows that they have a separate meat and dairy, and it's so involved, and all the laws with the cooking and with the kosher certification of foods is built on much of that. And yet, in the Torah, it's three small verses repeated, the same verse, that and it doesn't, and it's it is whole books and that you have to learn to understand these laws. And what is it based on? Three small verses in the Torah, and it's basically the same verse. It says that you're not allowed to eat. You're not allowed to cook or sebashal gedi. You're not allowed to cook a gedi is a lamb, I gather. a sheep or a lamb, a gedi in the milk of its mother. Or sebashal gedi. My ignorance. A lamb is the baby of a. And in the milk of its mother. It says that three times in the Torah. And from there we learn all the laws of this. It's impossible just to read that verse and know all the laws. So orally God gave this over to Moses. And so anybody who's a practicing Judaism knows that you cannot differentiate between the written law and the oral law. It's one and the same. It's impossible to be a true practicing Jew if you say, I only accept the written law, the oral law is not so important, because it is part and parcel of the explanation for all the written law. And anybody who's a true practicing Jew who says that I uphold both of these, it's one thing. Anybody who says I don't hold the Talmud or it's not so important, either is ignorant or is a heretic or is ignorant of Judaism. And this is going for all the thousands of years. Also, Torah that could be divided in another manner of two things. There's the commandments that are regarding our responsibility to the Almighty, that has nothing to do with, let's say, the Sabbath. It has nothing to do with the effects on a fellow human being. It's just that you have to uphold kosher, as we say, eating only what's kosher. And then the
kosher can be used for all sorts of different things, just besides food, though, right?
Right, but wait, it's just like what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't. Yeah, true. But the kosher, usually the basic word is used to that it has to the food, which is true. But it's used already in other terminologies. But basically, what I'm trying to say, the Sabbath, that you shouldn't desecrate the Sabbath, you're not allowed to make a fire on the Sabbath. All these are the laws that have to do with the human being to his. To the Almighty, his relationship to God, while the other part of the Torah, like say half the Torah, whatever it is the laws that pertain that a man to his fellow human being, not to steal, not to kill. All of it has to do with the Almighty, because let's say what people call human rights, we call godliness, and so forth. So, but it's all one thing, it's one Torah, but I'm saying the Torah is you can divide into two categories. Okay, well, let me just not... go off on a tangent. Basically, Jewish people accepted this Torah, this covenant on Mount Sinai. That is what the Torah is all about. That's what Judaism is all about. And then And then we were put under oath not to, after the destruction of the temple, not to try to return en masse, like I say, not to go back. Okay, that's basic Judaism. What do we pray and hope for? Judaism's, our purpose on this world is to serve the Almighty and to elevate ourselves and elevate the world to serve God, let's say. And the most, that's what we yearn and what our life is supposed to be about. And the ultimate of this would be eventually, which we pray and we yearn for the redemption. What is the end of exile? What is the redemption? What a Jew hopes for, basic, any Jew, and it's in our basic prayers, is that some one day God will find the time proper and will end this exilic period, and he will, what does that mean, ending of this exile? That he will make a metaphysical change, in other words, a miraculous change, where all humanity one day will wake up, maybe today, maybe tomorrow, we'll wake up one day and the whole world will recognize that there's one God on the world. And everybody will serve him together in harmony. At that day, there's many verses in Isaiah and many verses in all the prophecies. It says, there will come a day when the sheep will rest with the wolf. It says that the nations will not pick up a sword against another nation. This, by the way, across from the United Nations, there's this wall called the Isaiah Wall, and it says this verse, it's etched into the wall across from the UN. It says that the nations will not pick up a sword against the other nations. They will beat the swords into plowshares. So this is a miraculous change. This is nothing that could happen today, only through a miraculous change, that all the atheists wake up and recognize one God. You know, this is a miraculous change. And this is what a Jew prays and yearns for. He does not pray and yearn for the end of exile, meaning that we should have a state, our own state of Israel, something like that. So that's totally a whole different concept. We pray and a Jew yearns because our ultimate reason, for our purpose on this world is for the glory of the Almighty, to bring everything to serve the Almighty. And so the ultimate, the pinnacle of all of this is when God will make this revelation where all the world will serve him. So that's what we pray and yearn and hope for, and what we say at the Passover, Lashon HaBa B'Yerushalayim, the coming year in Jerusalem. It means when God will make this change where all humanity will recognize one God, and we believe that God will ultimately build Jerusalem a fire. That's in our prayers we say. What does that mean? In other words, it will be a spiritual happening, not that we will go and take a hammer and nail whatever and start building. That's not what we're talking about. It's a whole metaphysical change, something entirely different. That is why Jews, through these thousands of years, never made these attempts to return and buy a piece of land, right, and recreate a Jewish kingdom, so to say. Because this is not what we're lacking. This is not what we're lacking, and this is not what we're yearning and striving for. It's a totally spiritual happening. Judaism is a spirituality. Now let's turn to Zionism. Zionism is the transformation of this religion of spirituality, of subservience to the Almighty, transforming it into something entirely different, into materialism, into having a piece of land, into a nationalistic goals and selfish goals, whatever is good for this movement. And this is something which is entirely strange to Judaism. Judaism is not, they want to refer to, let's say, the state of Israel as a democracy. Judaism is not a democracy. Judaism is subservience to the Almighty and obeying his commandments, whether we understand them or we don't, and so forth. And Zionism brags about its being a democracy. Whether it's a democracy is a total lie. That's not the point. But even talking that they are a democracy is, and at the same time calling it a Jewish state, is something which is basically contradictory. And so Zionism is contradictory in its concept. It's contradictory in the laws, because Judaism, as we said, we were put under oath by God not to return en masse. We are forbidden to rebel against any nation, any people. We have to be all citizens in every country we were residing, and not to make any attempts to end exile. So the concept of creating a state, our own entity, mind you, even if it wouldn't have been in Palestine, would be forbidden according to, because we're not allowed to make any attempts to end exile. So all these concepts of making this so-called Jewish state, and especially being that it was decided to create the state of Israel in Palestine, so that breaches all of these oaths of God. go back to Palestine, will not return en masse. And they meant, and they clearly state, they call themselves the Eschalta of the Geula, beginning of redemption. So they're contradicting the laws of God, ignoring it, and you know, and trying to create the state, and yet using Jewish phrases to do it. Now, it would be forbidden for us, and one little more point, it would be forbidden for us to do this, even if it would have been an uninhabited land, because this whole concept of rebelling against God's decreed exile, that we were sent here because of God, because of our lacking in holiness and spirit. So it's a decreed godly exile, and the solution is when God will end it. Now, if this is forbidden, even if it would have been uninhabited, the land, the Palestinian people wouldn't be there. Being that they decided to create their state in an inhabited land, so now you are imposing yourself upon another people. You're banishing them from their homes. You're stealing their land, killing them. Everything, all that's being the oppression of the Palestinian people and what they're doing to them is totally against the issues of the Torah, which we called, before we mentioned that you're not allowed, that the Torah tells us not to steal, not to kill, and that we call godliness, people call human rights. So whatever they're doing to the Palestinian people, that just breaches all the concepts of the Torah, of what the Torah is about, being subservient to God, because in one of the Torah statements is that just as God is compassionate, you must be compassionate. Judaism teaches us that God is totally compassionate and the creator of all humankind. And so now, as a person, we are required to emulate God. And the Torah clearly states, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill. Everything that Zionism does contravenes that, is diametrically opposite, you know, is contradictory to all of this that we've just mentioned.
Basic